It's been 6 months since millions of folks all around the world gathered for the Women's March to support women's health care and reproductive equality. While the protest was a huge success, there's still a lot of work to be done. But nowhere in the feminist handbook does it say, "Thou shalt not have a little fun," so why not put on a comedy show?
Today, comedian Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, joins us to talk about the Vagical Mystery Tour, where people can hear comedians tell some jokes and join the resistance to help ensure women's access to healthcare. Listen as Liz joins us to take a look at Bill Cosby's hung jury and President Trump and his distracting tweets.
Plus, her amazing friendships with Rachel Maddow and Sarah Silverman.
Why it may seem like comedians like Kathy Griffin and Paul Rubens willingly sabotage their careers.
And the Alpine Inn restaurant in Omaha, Nebraska, that feeds its leftovers to terrifying raccoons. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you have Feast of Fun in your ears because for the last 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. If you like the show, please make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. And if you didn't like the show, make a donation anyway to help us improve.
Welcome to Lady Parts Justice League. If you know your party's extension, you may dial it at any time. Or press 0 for a com-
Hello?
Roll up the Vagical Mystery Tour. That's all I can do, because otherwise the Beatles are going to sue us.
What?
They're dead. Oh. Michael Jackson's dead. All the ancillary people who would sue you are dead.
That's true. How are you doing, Liz?
I have not talked to you guys in for fucking ever, and I'm super excited.
Last time we had you on, you were promoting Grey Gardens on Broadway. That's how long ago it was.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
If I remember
so
correctly.
So much has happened since then.
Yeah, and there was a whole
Little
election.
Little Edie's couple president
elections.
Now?
Little Edie's president. She sure
I
is.
Mean. Oh, honey, my God. What is happening?
I'm ready to join your Lady Parts Justice League.
You know what? It's a really fun league because it's all these crazy comics. We got all of our favorite comics together and we're on tour and we look at the lineup and we were like, holy shit, Liz, this is the first time any of us have ever been on a comedy show where there's no straight white dudes and I'm the only cis. It's just full of really fun queers and people of color and queer people of color and trans people, you know, and it's like the best show. It's just so fun.
Yes.
It's a rainbow uterus.
It's a rainbow uterus, you know? Yeah. So what's pretty cool is, so yeah. I know, right?
So Liz, what's your superpower if you're a legion of gender and sexually non-conforming superheroes? What's your strength and what's your weakness?
Well, first of all, I think my Achilles heel is there's too many attractive people and too little time.
That's
Achilles heel.
You just have to
you
do
know,
groups.
When you bring together all the wonderful people, it's just like, it's a feast of fun, if you will.
I'll take
and
it.
And I think our superpower is really bringing folks together to learn about the issues at stake when it comes to reproductive health, whether that's abortion care, trans health, LGBT health, you know, what it means for black and brown people, and having people set up and go, oh my God, I had no idea. And then after our fun comedy show, we do a talk back with people who provide care and they talk about what they need and then people sign up to volunteer. So it's a really fun evening of like, I'm having a great time and building community. Oh my God, I can help these people out. I can really go make a difference after I've been at the show. So it's great.
Well, so it's really interesting because, you know, I think the Women's March took place the day after Trump's inauguration, if I'm correct, right?
Right. It was right after, yeah. Right?
And an estimated 5 million people participated worldwide, and 500,000 in Washington, D.C. And a lot of people compared it to the Civil Rights March in 1963 with Martin Luther King, right? And but this is kind of the opposite in the sense that you had everybody come together, and now the community, which is the slow process, is starting to be built. And I think that's what you're doing with this show, isn't it?
Well, and I think that's right. And I think, you know, it's so interesting that, like, I don't know what it takes for a lot of, like, white folks to understand, and really even privileged white women to understand, like, how bad things were and how bad Trump really was. And everybody was despondent the day after the election, just like standing in these soiled melon colored pantsuits, eating food out of their bras, going, I don't know what just happened. You know?
And then Madonna showed up.
Madonna stepped up, you know, she was having her moment.
Did you feel like Madonna knew what she was doing when she's like, I sometimes feel like blowing up the White House, but I won't do it because I'm all about love.
I know. You know what I thought was more fun was Cher, because Cher was just like in the crowd being like, this is the best thing ever. Cher was not on stage. Cher was just live tweeting as like a regular person walking through the crowd, like in her like hat, and they're like, hey, I'm Cher, I'm hanging out with all these feminists. And she was like having the time of her life. It was great.
I think Cher's Twitter account is a work of art.
Well, I really think that to get into cap locks rehab because Cher. You gotta stop yelling.
It feels with Trump that it's inevitable that he's going to be either impeached or he's going to be resigning. And with his tweets and all this misbehavior, it feels like a distraction from what Republicans are doing in trying to pass a lot of legislation like removing or destroying health care and making us not notice that it's happening.
Well, for sure. And you know, that's so crazy is that, let's say Trump gets impeached, our government is basically a nesting doll of evil. It's like, oh, now there's Mike Pence. He hits women and the gays and the brown people and the everybody. And then Paul Ryan, who is about the worst. And, you know, I was brought up Catholic. And Paul Ryan's so bad that Catholic nuns actually, like, rented a bus and drove him down to tell him what a piece of shit he was. Mm. He is so bad. He's the only Catholic that believes communion is a handout. He's just terrible. You know, it just never ends. It never ends. You know, so where do you go? Ben Carson? I mean, honestly, what is happening? Jeff Sessions? I mean, you just look at them all, and it just feels a little bit like, that's why we have to have these kind of like get-together moments where we are experiencing joy, talking about a plan, you know, getting together especially, you know, we have to intersect and just all of us look and see there is a common enemy and it is coming from, you know, Orange 45. And we just need to like say we all need to work together on our junk because holy moly, this person is like an angry Macy's balloon that got loose. Who's just like bouncing into things like
It is shocking that he actually ended up becoming president after all.
And he was shocked.
Yeah, he was shocked. And I think Cher was definitely shocked too, because she did a lot of stumping for Hillary, you know, and show up for these private events for all the gays. And then we wake up and he's actually the president. So I think we're still in some state of shock over it.
Well, I think too, you know, like, you know, we all know that we live in a world that's like misogynistic and homophobic. I think that I didn't realize how bad it was that people could literally hate women and hate Hillary more than they love sanity. That's crazy.
And it's not even the adults, the kids are there. I was just back home visiting a family back home and friends. And, you know, I have friends with a couple. One of them is a Democrat. The other one, her husband's a Republican. And their kid was all pro-Trump. And I'm like, you're 11 years old. What do you even know?
I know. You know, I just sat there. My only hope was that you burn a lot of calories blocking people on Facebook.
Well, is that the answer to just block them? Because some people, I guess, are suing President Trump because of they've been blocked from his Twitter account. And they're saying that that's impinging on their First Amendment right to free speech because he uses that as a vehicle for the government.
It's like some comedian on Father's Day said, like, happy Father's Day to a man who's had three wives and five children, and he blocked them.
Mm.
Well, I love too. Stephen King got blocked by Trump.
Oh,
I was like, is it because Stephen King just isn't scary enough for you? He doesn't torture people enough in his books for you? Like, what the fuck? When you're blocking Stephen King because he needs to step up his, like, creepy game, it's like a problem.
You know, we talk to a lot of people doing this podcast, and I imagine you talk to a lot of people as you travel. And one thing that sort of distresses me when I hear coming from people that I trust and know are well informed, they say that there's no difference between the political parties, that there's no point in participating, that there's no, you know, that we're the game's done, that we're fucked because, you know, the Russians have taken over. The Democrats are the same as the Republicans. Give up. Walk away. And I think about that is I think about other countries and other societies where the populations have given up. And I think about Russia, actually. And it's really interesting now that we have sort of this Russian Republican connection happening here, because in a lot of ways, Republicans want us to be like Russia.
Well, right. And, you know, I have to be honest, you know who I really feel sorry for?
Who?
The Republican ambassador, because he must be in therapy like 4 times a week, because whenever he meets people, no one remembers him. He's like lost. No one seems to remember meeting the poor thing.
Oh, Jeff Sessions and all the recent testimony.
All of them. I never met the guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't that Reagan's defense?
Remember, you were meeting him.
Yeah, that was also like Reagan's defense.
Whole, like,
I have Alzheimer's, so I don't remember anything.
Totally. Where am I? Who am I? Am I president? I'm sorry, what? No, I don't know. But, you know, what I think is so interesting about the people who have said there's no difference between the parties, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, do you not know any women or brown people or gay people or queer people or trans people or immigrants? Because the parties are real different when it comes to those people. So, you know, it's no different if you're a rich person, because you're going to get your tax breaks and you're going to do just fine and you can buy your way out of situations that are horrible. But, you know, when it's not your family being deported, families being ripped apart, when it's not your reproductive destiny that's being legislated, you know, when it's not your living in your own body and being able to just go to the bathroom where you see fit, when it's not your marriage that's being legislated, go fuck yourself if you can't see a difference. Honestly, like, that infuriates me.
Well, the Vagical Mystery Tour is going to a lot of places that may have bathroom restrictions. Atlanta, Georgia, Birmingham, Alabama, Jackson, Mississippi. Are you giving the trans performers a bucket to pee in backstage, or does that work?
Well, what's really great is that these trans performers are just like living out loud and fierce. And so it's like, I'm going to the bathroom where I want. Let's ask questions later. And I'm like, yes. So it's been really cool because we've gone to places where people, you know, what's really fun is to have folks come out who are trans in these communities where nobody comes and does a show that's like this, or gay or women or feminist, or, you know, even if you're like, maybe we shouldn't be up, you know, having more troops in Afghanistan, you know, for them to not have to travel 500 miles to a larger city to see a concert, to hear voices that they would like, it's really fun. And so, you know, we just recently did this amazing show in Memphis called Condemonium, which raised money for this trans healthcare plan so poor folks can get HRTs. And it was, they had a fashion show with gowns made of condoms, and it was incredible. People were killing it, made out of the wrappers and the condoms. It was really fun. And there was 400 people there out supporting the trans community in Memphis. And you're like, oh my God, you know, when we establish safe gathering spaces, people can look around and see that there's support in the community in a way that maybe you wouldn't if there wasn't these events to go to. So, you know, by doing the Vagical Mystery Tour, what we're hoping is that we can gather those spaces and people can come to a show and look around and say, oh my God, I feel safe. I see community here. You know, I can be a little bit more vocal. I have a support to do it. And let's have some fun.
Yeah, I've tried making a dress out of condoms in the 90s, but I just wound up running out of material.
Oh.
You can always get free ones at the STI clinic, Fausto. Just go down and get more.
I kept running out. That's the thing about it. If you make a dress out of condoms, you're going to be naked by the end of the night.
Well, dude, you got to use the wrapper, too.
Liz, you're somebody who had a big hand in what a lot of people are talking about today is comedy news shows. The Daily Show, Stephen.
Yeah.
You actually hired Stephen Colbert for The Daily Show. Weren't you a part of that?
I sure did. And Lewis Black. How crazy is that?
And you gave Rachel Maddow her big break. I mean, you've had a big hand in shaping the way we think and consume the news today.
Well, you know, I hope so. You know, it's nice to have some instinct, and it's nice to be able to have been given opportunity to people that you know are cool and smart and that people will love. And, you know, it's so funny because people forget that there was women behind all of these shows that people hold so near and dear and find influential. And it's like, yep, the shows that you like most all the time, there's some woman behind it, you know, giving credit to some dude, but then sometimes it's a woman giving credit to another woman.
I know. So, sometimes people forget, you know, there's a woman behind Rachel Maddow, if you know what I'm talking about.
Although, have you guys ever seen, hold the phone, have you seen Rachel Maddow's graduation picture?
Her what picture?
Her graduation?
High school graduation picture?
I have, actually, yeah. She looks like, doesn't she look really glamorous?
I want you to put it in your podcast show notes.
Oh, wow.
Holy
Jesus.
Hello.
She's like Debbie.
Fun for the show notes.
She's like, what is it? Blonde. What is that movie? The Blonde.
Legally Blonde.
Legally Blonde.
Yeah.
She's Tommy Lauren.
But she's still like that Stone Cold Butch is like fighting to get out of the pearl necklace.
She's very lipstick here, but Stone Cold's coming out there.
She's so funny, too, because she, when you're in the makeup room with her at MS, she's reading the whole time, and she's not paying attention to the makeup they put on her at all. And she puts on, you know, the jacket so she can just look like a professional news person. And so, and she does not care. Like, if she had, like, hot pink lipstick and crazy light blue eyeshadow, she would be like, oh, is that what I'm supposed to look like? Okay, I'm gonna do what I think, which is the smart news. But her eyelashes are 17 feet long, like in real life. And so it's crazy. You know, she just looks, I just think Rachel's gorgeous. She's just one of those people who's like, I just think it's really hot.
Well, I want to know, because you're still close friends with her, and you've probably gone to her apartment to make consume one of her legendary cocktails.
She is a good bartender.
What did she make for you? And tell me, what did it taste like?
Well, I'm kind of, I don't go too crazy on my booze.
Yeah.
So some kind of bourbon drink, maybe a Moscow Mule, maybe a Manhattan. You know, she gets into that whole like lavender bitters realm. And it is, because we used to have, when we were on the radio together, we had a mixologist on, Josie, who would come on a lot and just do some like drinking, you know. It's always good when you have a show, you can just bring a guest on under the guise of telling your audience something new and you just really want to learn something. So it's really great.
But so Rachel's all about making her own bitters, because Mark, you do that too.
I've made some before, but it's, you know, when you get into that lavender territory, it can be real dangerous, because if a fine line between really tasting good and you're guzzling perfume.
That's on my bucket list, is to drink one of Rachel's cocktails. I'm serious.
I know, because I mean, you do. Yeah, I understand. Because it's worth it. And you know, she is, every year at the correspondence dinner, MSNBC, you know, they have a big table, and she never goes to the dinner, but she is the bartender at the after party. And so she can never go to get invited to the White House correspondence dinner, MSNBC after party. Wow. She is mixing the drink.
I got to get an invitation to that. What do you make of the whole, because you've been so involved in news, you know, with radio and also with The Daily Show. What do you make of the whole Trump fascination with fake news?
Well, the fact that he creates it and then tries to say, it just feels like we're all gaslit. I feel like the nation just needs to rent the movie Gaslight and watch it all at once so you can see what's actually happening to us. Because the fact that he keeps calling out fake news. But then, like, that crazy Alex Jones, who was just interviewed by Megyn Kelly, you know, he calls into that show and he loves him and he hires Breitbart. Like, his entire cabinet and his entire information, like, sieve and font is all people who were the architects of fake news. And then he says, it's all designed to confuse us all, so the regular folks can't tell what's real and what isn't. And I have to tell you that at this point, everything that comes out of his mouth is fake news. I mean, I'm in the car right before you guys call, and he's literally saying, talking to the president of Panama, taking credit for the U.S. building the Panama Canal. We did it. Yeah. He's like, it happened 100 years ago, and we sort of had a hand in it. And you guys helped a little, but, like, we built the canal. And at one point, I was like, what an idiot. And then the second point, I was like, well, at least he's talking about a canal that's not a woman's birth canal. So, yay. We had a little canal.
Did he try and grab that Panama
for
canal?
For a hot minute. Yeah.
Well, I wonder, do you feel...
Panama Canal!
Do you notice any kind of change, like, in the way that people perceive you? Because, like, as being somebody, like, in the media or behind news, and the way it's kind of changed. Like, for some reason, I feel like since he's been elected, because we do media here, we've kind of, in some ways, become public enemy number one.
We're the bad
100%!
You know?
And you're public enemy number one, and then it's like, what's so amazing to me is, it's literally word salad that comes out of Trump and Sean Spicer's mouth and the people he surrounds himself with. And the fact that it's like he can make the people who are articulate communicators the enemy through his weird, nonsensical crap, you're just like, I'm sorry, you just tweeted confifi. What is that? What does that even mean? Like, no one knows. And then Sean Spicer's like, it's a secret code. And it's like, no, it's not.
He's thought it's pronounced confifi. Covfefe. Yeah.
Covfefe.
What did you say? Covfefe?
Covfefe.
I said covfefe.
Let's call the whole thing off.
You know, here's the deal. You say covfefe. I say covfefe. You know what it is? It's regional. Here's what it also
regional
is.
Regional dialect.
Well, since I'm a Spanish speaker, so I saw that and I was like, anything that doesn't make sense, it sounds like it comes in my head as Spanish.
I would say cofefe.
Totally. That's hilarious.
But he was trying to... What was the word he was trying to say?
Nothing.
Cofefe?
Conventionally or something. Yeah. I don't know. It was just a typo.
And then afterwards, Trump was like, who knows what cofefe means? Enjoy. Like he was just like, enjoy this crazy nonsensical thing that... another thing that I made. And to me, it's like, you know, he is, in a lot of ways, the ultimate show person, because we're fascinated at the destruction of our government and our society at the hands of these Republicans.
It's also just one more gross tactic that, like, powerful dude with unearned power and just is rich can just, his hair, his ill-fitting suits, his tie, his disgusting way he talks about women, you know, the way he eats, just everything about him, like even just his like massive like mouth Giardia and Twitter Giardia, you know, it's like, it's all just this power play to be like, how much can I fuck with you just to show you what I can get away with? Because I'm rich and powerful.
In talking to people that work in customer service or in restaurants, a common thread pops up, which is a customer will come in who knows they can't get what they're asking for. They want a free meal. They're unhappy about a purchase or something. And so what they do, a common tactic, is that they raise their voice. They barrage the waiter or the salesperson with a list of crazy problems and then demand everything for free that they know they can't have.
Yeah.
And to me, in a lot of ways, like, Trump behaves like that angry customer who's like, I want this, you know, $200 meal for free because there was a hair on my plate that I ate.
Yeah. And they'll shut him up just to... you know, they'll acquiesce to the demand just to like not have there be a stirring problem. I mean, it's classic bullying. And it's so incredible that he's now beholden bullies. And one thing that the clinics have told us on this tour, as we're traveling around and we're, you know, we're doing support for these reproductive health clinics, is that there's been more and more protesters out there who are these like big white bullies who are shaming oftentimes women of color as they go to have their services done, because Trump has told them that they are allowed to, you know, the pussy grabbing thing. Really emboldened a lot of people to say, hey, society won't care how you treat women. And so can imagine what it feels like to be a woman of color walking into your clinic and to have these emboldened white dudes telling you that your body shouldn't be your own. It's pretty fucking crazy.
Well, it makes it easy to find the clinics, though, right? Just, you know, go.
Yeah. Hey, where do I go get my services? Look for the whole bunch of white guys standing outside screaming at you. Oh, good. Great.
Just follow the trucks with the Union Jack flags on the back of the bumper sticker. Mm.
Oh, so insane.
Have you heard about this? And this is what Shakespeare in the Park, that's happening in New York, right? They've been doing Julius Caesar. And the Julius Caesar is a play about how when you murder the president, bad things happen. And so in the past, productions of Julius Caesar throughout the years have always had the president as a stand-in for Julius Caesar. So they've done it with Obama, they did with Reagan, now they're doing it with Trump. And it's caused a furor. And I guess corporations,
the Fuhrer,
and corporations have pulled their funding, and people are running up onto the stage and comparing actors and Shakespeare himself to Nazis. And I'm like, yeah, Shakespeare was a time traveling Nazi.
It is so unbelievable. I got Delta pulled out, Bank of America pulled out, and, you know, it's so, people just do not know their history. And it is really hilarious to me, and also terrifying to me, that when people don't know their history, and then there's this like backlash, and it's like, this has been done historically with every single president. And now, is it just too close to home for you because it's real and you're pulling out because you no longer see the irony, you know? And then for people to feel entitled to like jump on stage, it feels a little bit just like somebody just opened the gates of like asylums across America and then said, go vote and then go do whatever you want. It's all yours. The world is your oyster.
And have a slice of chocolate cake at the end of it.
Well, really good shot. The best chocolate cake.
And they certainly are emboldened, aren't they? Because, you know, when the election was going on, we kind of really just thought Hillary was going to win, because it was just such a, the idea that he would become president seemed so ridiculous at the time. But we were seeing a lot of actions coming out with the election. And I kept thinking, you know, when Hillary becomes president, you know, these guys, they'll become less emboldened because they'll be defeated and they'll just go away. But yet it didn't happen. And so, like, how do we keep fighting them, though?
I think that we have to keep fighting them by, you know, really taking this moment and understanding that it is our government to create. And so if in 2018, when we have these midterm elections and we can take over the state legislatures, which is crucial because so many of these laws, whether it's the gun laws, the voting laws, the LGBT laws, the reproductive rights laws, you know, those are really coming out of state legislatures and governorships, right? Mm-hmm. So if we can take back some of those, if we can take back the Senate and the House, we can curb his agenda. And so we do have some power, but we have to realize that we all have to get off our patoots and make a decision to get people registered to vote, make sure they know that the importance of what happens in 2018, you know, have them learn about the people they are, you know, visit your indivisible groups in your communities to get people, you know, have a town hall, hold them accountable, because politicians will do nothing if they don't see there's not a ramification if they don't. And so if you have something that you feel is really important, you know, force them to have a town hall, show up at your local headquarters and say, I demand this be a thing. And they listen. When people show up, they really sit up and take notice. It's really effective.
But I think the Vagical Mystery Tour, not to, you know, get, I want to promote and encourage not just your show, but to get our listeners to come up with their own Vagical Mystery Tours, because ultimately,
you know,
it's 100%.
That is so true. You know, if we had a team of like, you know, LGBT and LGBT supporters going out and talking about, you know, the laws that were happening in their state and bringing activists out to tell people, you know, how the community could be helpful in either killing laws or proposing good laws, you know, environmental groups, immigrants' rights groups. You could really make a difference through gathering people together for a fun evening is much easier than saying, who wants to come over and talk about how we're going to, you know, unseat this person? You're like, no one. But how about a comedy show where you like get some really good tips so you and your friends can like step up and be part of the solution? Yes, I think I'd like to go to that.
Well, I think, in the past decade, the internet sort of given us all these tools just to stay in our homes and out of the streets, out of our clubs and meeting each other face to face. And ultimately, like we need to have FaceTime with each other. We need to build community and create excuses, sexy, exciting, funny, wonderful excuses to interact with each other in a physical space.
That is exact. You just summed it up so perfectly. Please put that on a shirt and a t-shirt and a card, because that is exactly right. We have isolated ourselves from community, and now we have to get back through the communities we've built in our online world. We have to get those things together and then start talking again and meeting again, because that's the only way.
But that's the weakness and the strengths that we're facing here, right? So the Women's March allowed, you know, it happened overnight because we had all the social media, all these Facebook pages. Mm. We're ready, poised, and everybody showed up. Everybody's outrage, everybody's heartache. After, you know, as was it Carrie Fisher said, when you have a broken heart, you make art. Mm. And it allowed all of us to show up and do something. But now we're sort of come together and we don't know quite what to do next. And this is how we figured this out, is by building community.
I think that's right. And I think that the organizations that are in place doing the work need to join up because they have the solutions, right? A lot of people have the passion and the, I don't know what to do. And then what we're trying to do is bring them together with the community-based organization to say, I know you feel lost. I know you have energy. I know you want to do stuff. Here's some things you can do, because a lot of times people don't even know where to turn. So that part makes it really cool. So if you have all the energy and all the enthusiasm and then some direction, then we're killing it.
Can we talk about celebrities creating their own nonprofits? What a terrible idea that is.
Is it?
I think it's a bad idea. Yeah. Not you.
The Lady Parts Justice
League. But see, the Lady Parts Justice League is working with established nonprofits.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga's Born This Way Foundation, I want to draw attention to, was in a lot of ways, even Madonna's, trying to build schools in Africa, started to illustrate the drawbacks of celebrities creating their own nonprofits instead of your approach, which is creating a nonprofit to work to collaborate with existing organizations. And the big distinction between Madonna's and Lady Gaga's organizations was they struggled so much because they didn't know what to do with the funds. They didn't have the infrastructure. They didn't have the staff, the experience, the grassroots experience to actually implement these funds that they raise in a meaningful way. And what I'm really excited about what you're doing is you're actually working with people who actually have been doing these things already. You're not mirroring
them.
Well,
and what I realized is that, no, and that's what we did. It's like when I looked at the landscape of like what could be done in my movement and I saw all this really good work and I was like, you know what? I can do a show and bring people together to meet these people. And then they can take the lead and do that. I also can make videos that are funny and smart and that will expose this bullshit to get people aware of what's happening. And so you're exactly right. I am not here to do the work that these amazing people are doing. I'm here to amplify their work by gathering them in a place with entertainers. It's like just that simple.
You're kind of like the thinking man's, female comedian, like to everybody. Like, you know, somebody like compared you one time to one of our listeners back when Kathy Griffin was on My Life on the D-List.
Yeah.
And we had her on, and we had you on, and people were like, "Oh, these amazing redheads!"
Is Liz a redhead?
Well, I don't know if do you identify as a redhead these days, or
no, I identify as who the fuck is going to do my roots on the roadhead. If you go look at our like Instagram, you'll just see Liz in a lot of cowboy hats, looking super badass. And it's not that I'm a badass; is that my roots are a shit show.
Listen, I have the same. So I'm hoping to find somebody in Chicago. You know, and I think for like,
my male
privilege allows me to get away with dyeing my hair for one, because people don't think that a dude would dye his hair. And then two, when the gray starts showing, they're just like, oh, he's, you know, sexy silver daddy, whatever. But it's like when women start dyeing their hair, they're just like, you're not a feminist because you're trying to look good. Or.
Is that right?
You know what I say to those people? Go fuck yourself.
My mother gives me so much shit for dyeing my hair. You basically told my mother to go fuck yourself.
Dye your hair.
What?
You dye your hair. You go for it. I don't care.
Listen, it shaves off years off your face, I think. You know, and sometimes you want to go gray. Sometimes, you know, it's like, I'm a big fan of it. Now,
no one would ever say to you, don't cut your hair. Yeah. Why do you have a haircut? You know who gets their haircut? Pretentious people. What?
Well, I've always dreamed of getting one of those Flobies, you know, those vacuum cleaners, and you can just connect to your head and, you know.
I don't think that would be a good look for you.
No, it's a bad idea.
First of all, honey, dream bigger. Dream bigger.
Buy a wig.
What did you make of the whole Kathy Griffin holding Trump's bloody head?
Here's what I always feel about things. I always say, everybody go for it if you want to make a statement, but also realize that everybody else is going to get to have feelings about it. And so do you have a plan to defend it? You know, do you have a plan of what you want your direction to be? You know, have you created a controversial situation where people are talking about what you're doing, not that you did it? You know what I mean? And so I think that, you know, I feel like if you're going to calculatingly do something that you want to be provocative, go for it. Don't apologize for it.
Well, I do feel, because she apologized, but I feel like she was apologizing to the people like that were offended by it, but not really apologizing for it. It was kind of a confusing apology.
You felt
apology.
Like it was a conditional apology.
Well, she goes, I knew, I heard, like, some people were really shocked, you know, people who had been, like, she said, like, people that had been in wars, people who had seen, like, devastation and murder and that kind of stuff. Like, she felt bad for them, but she still stood by it.
Here's the thing with Kathy Griffin is that she gets a lot. I know for a fact that she gets a lot of shitty gigs she doesn't want to do.
Like all comedians?
Yeah. And this is a way of her like.
You mean she's a comedian?
She says she writes all her own jokes.
No, but I'm saying like maybe she's just, you know, sometimes as artists, we make decisions on a unconscious level because we want to get rid of things in our lives that we feel are holding us back. And in some way, you know, we all hate Trump. And I think in this case with Kathy Griffin holding up that Trump head, she instinctively knew that it was going to cost her a lot of gigs, but those were gigs she didn't want to have. I mean, she's set financially. She doesn't have to work a day in her life. She's still getting some of that. What was that TV show she was in? The TV show she was on. She played
Suddenly Susan. Suddenly Susan.
She's still milking Suddenly Susan money.
Yeah. Somebody else said that same analogy about Pee Wee Herman when he got busted jerking off theater, that they didn't know who he was and he told them. You know, he wasn't dressed like Pee Wee. He was just Paul Rubens in a theater jerking off watching porn. And somebody said, I heard that same thing about him. It was like, oh, you know, when they arrested him, that he told them who he was because maybe he just was trying to figure out a way to expand his career and not be Pee Wee anymore. And he didn't know how. So, it's an interesting analogy for sure.
So he took things in hand.
Took it in his own hand. Well, and I think as artists, as you know, comedians, musicians, performers, we work on a very subconscious level, much more so than we realize. And we make decisions on a really intuitive way. And sometimes we just do things that on the surface seem poor choices. But ultimately, in the long run, I trust Kathy Griffin's instincts in this. And I think that she probably 10 years from now will probably benefit from it in the long run.
You know, and I don't think it's going to, I just think it's not going to hurt her in the least, because I think that, you know, Kathy Griffin's politics are very clear with people. Her belief system is very clear with people. She's verbally articulated really strong opinions on a host of issues. And so, you know, I think she's going to be fine. I think she's going
to
be fine.
And now she doesn't have to hang out with Anderson Cooper on New Year's Eve. She can actually go hang out with her friends and family.
Yeah, have some drinks on New Year's Eve, honey.
Wouldn't that be nice? I mean,
take
the thing about like people who work like Ryan Seacrest, for example, like that just seems miserable to me. I don't know. I mean,
listen, if you're getting a big fat paycheck, you
and
take
I can understand like people who want to work on New Year's Eve. I've worked on New Year's Eve and stuff, and I enjoy the money. But to feel like you have to do it year after year and it defines you as a person, that I don't know, that can be fun.
Well, I think it's funny because, you know, I do a big comedy show every New Year's Eve. It's a year in review. So I do this whole comedy year in review. But what's great is I love to do it because it's like saying goodbye to the bullshit. Yeah. And I do it at 7:30 at night and I'm done at 9:00 and then I go out and have fun. So for me, it's like a win.
And then you go to bed by 11
in a contained environment. I know. And then I go to Denny's and then I'm in bed by 11.
Were you surprised at all?
Living the dream.
Were you surprised at all about Bill Cosby and the mistrial that just happened?
Oh, it was well hung trial,
hung jury.
The well hung jury. You know what I feel like after Trump got elected? Pussy grabbing didn't matter. None of it mattered. I kind of was like, I mean, I've seen rape culture just rampantly exist, but it's just again. When a man admits he rapes people and the jury says that's not rape, it's just jarring. And just to watch people defend him and to watch and to have people think that, it, you know, 60 women are lying, you know, and that this woman was lying to say, well, you know, she called him afterwards and thanked him and had dinner with him and blah, blah, blah. It's like, please learn about rape. Please learn about rape and why people don't report rape. And the reason they don't is because you people are sitting there screaming about the fact that people who are raped are victimized and often they're absolutely trying to appease their accuser. And it's disgusting because for people to judge people who, for the reasons that they don't come forward or how they come forward or what they go through and don't even see the irony in the fact that through them questioning people, they're shaming them along the way is pathetic. I think that it's just the whole thing is gross. Bill Cosby is gross.
Did you hear Bill Cosby? He was coming out. This is not a joke that he actually did this. He came out on one of the days of deliberations and the paparazzi are going like, do you have anything to say today, Mr. Cosby? But he just turns around and goes, hey, hey, hey. And then he's walking.
Oh my God.
Like Fat Albert. And I was just like, that's a nervous tick.
What's a nervous?
You know, that Bill Cosby turns into Fat Albert when he's anxious.
Is that what happens?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was so weird. It was real. You can watch it on YouTube. He just like, and it's kind of an angry, like, hey, 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 leave me alone. Like kind of, and then he just walked off.
Oh my God. I think I'm going to barf.
Yeah, it gives a whole new meaning to watch. I love the Cosby. What is it, Fat Albert? Like
the cartoon, yeah.
You know, yeah. Dave Chappelle. What do you make of the Dave Chappelle's the superhero bit? Is that he saves but he rapes?
What?
He's familiar with that, right?
What? That bit?
So Dave Chappelle in his Netflix comedy special, he made a he was commenting on Bill Cosby. And how much people really love Bill Cosby's work as a comedian. And so he's talking about that as imagine if there's a superhero who saves a lot of lives, but he also rapes. And he saves more lives than he rapes, but he also rapes. And in order to save those lives, he has to rape. And it was like it was very controversial, the joke. I don't know.
It's very challenging humor.
Yeah. And you know,
it sounds like a total fucked up premise. No, I don't even. That's like crazy because, you know what? First of all, he has to rape. His superpower is raping people. So he can save
saving
other people
but he has to rape. I mean,
right, but he would have, why does he have to rape? That is like a concept that I don't buy. Like, I have to rape. Otherwise, I die. Otherwise, I can't save. No, the whole thing is so fucked up and crazy that I can't buy it. Because I honestly think people do not know how to separate Cliff Huxtable from Bill Cosby. And it's like, Cliff Huxtable is not on trial here. Bill Cosby the rapist is. So let's be real clear.
Would you be able to watch, though, the Cliff Huxtable now? Like, could you sit there and watch an episode of that TV show now, knowing what we know about him?
You know, it's come on. No, it's, I can't even look at Bill Cosby. The whole thing grosses me out. And the apologizing around it grosses me out. And also just knowing, you know, when you read more about it and you read about how many people, like the rape industrial complex around Bill Cosby, you know, who allowed it to happen, who looked the other way, all the, you know, people just denied it just because there was so many people and jobs at stake. And it's like, God damn it. You know, that's when you're powerful and you know, you can get away with anything because there's so many people who don't want to report your creepy ass behavior because it working for you puts food on their table. Like, that is a fucked up place to be in the world.
Chelsea Manning's out of prison now. And she, her first photos.
And has a super cute haircut. Did
she looks adorable. Totally adorable.
Her Quickie Bob is everything.
Most eligible single woman right now on the internet, probably. Like, she's really cute and has the purest soul of somebody who's, like, you know, faced so much adversity. She, her first photos were like of her shoes, then a slice of pizza, and then it was like, and she just seems to have this just. You know, she's Mother Teresa in some ways. I don't know if you've been following her.
She's been people who tell the truth about their government are American heroes. And to have Chelsea Manning come into who Chelsea Manning is in the face of everything else is, I mean, that I cannot wait to read that memoir because she is truly like inspiring to me as a whistleblower, as somebody coming into their self, you know, just like everything about her is incredible.
Yeah. I really would love to have the pleasure of meeting her one day and have a cocktail with Rachel Maddow and you and, you know, talk about,
we should just all hang out. Can we just hang out?
Let's hang out. Well, you're coming to Chicago. This Friday, right?
I'm coming to Chicago Metro.
All right, it's next Friday.
The
27th.
Yes.
On the 27th, I will be at the Metro with Alonzo Bowden and Kay Valentine and Dina Nina Martinez and me, and it's going to be a whole fun show.
Dina was just on the podcast not too long ago. She's our neighbor, and it happened to be her birthday, so we got her a little birthday balloon. And she said that she was walking home with her birthday balloon. She was crossing the street, and an ambulance, like, through their loudspeaker said, "Happy birthday, ma'am." And she's just like, "It made my day." And it was just like,
Wait a minute, Dina's your neighbor?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so amazing. I love Dina so much.
Just blocks away.
Isn't Sarah Silverman roommates with you or something?
She's not my roommate, but she's one of my best friends, yeah.
Any plans on getting her involved in the Vagical Mystery Tour?
She's not doing the Vagical Mystery Tour, but she's done a whole bunch of other events for us. She does, she's done a couple of different shows with us. She's done videos with us. She's a big part of, in fact, she mentions us in her latest Netflix special.
Yes.
She gives us a shout out because she has a comedy bit about doing a benefit for us and having protesters talking to protesters outside the show. I won't give the joke away. You'll have to watch the Netflix special, but it's awesome.
Oh, did that come out? Yeah,
it's out.
Because we were watching, like, well, let's watch it. And so we turned it on, and it was just the preview, the trailer for it. We're like, oh, when's it coming out? So that was a few weeks ago, so now it's out. Before we go, I want to do a shout out to Rachel Borch of Hope, Maine, who had the presence of mind as she's running through the woods. She sees a rabid raccoon coming towards her, and she knows, for whatever reason, she knew it was going to bite her. So she just held out her hands, let her bite it on her hands, picked up the raccoon, ran over to a puddle in a swamp, and then just drowned it.
Oh my God.
21 years old. And she's just like, I know this thing's going to bite me. And so I'm just going to grab a hold. And she knew it was rabid. And so she just picked it up and just and drowned it in a puddle.
How deep
can
is that
Can we invite
puddle?
Her to our drinks? Because I feel like she is. I feel like she is bravery personified.
I know. That's a hope for America.
No, I have to tell you guys. So first of all, raccoons freak me the fuck out. And, you know, as a Grey Gardens lover, that is like too much. So I mean, we were just in Omaha doing a show. They have a restaurant here in Omaha called the Alpine Inn, which, by the way, Alpine in Omaha, please, people. So the restaurant is fried chicken, and then you throw your bones over this wall, and then it feeds the raccoons.
What?
That is the gimmick of the restaurant.
How many?
Yes.
How many
it
raccoons?
It is so gross. Google Alpine Inn raccoons, and you will barf. It's literally a Grey Gardens-themed restaurant.
Oh, raccoons. My God.
It's terrible.
And the ceiling's caving in, and there's an old woman in a bed screaming at you to play old records.
Yeah, you're wearing your shirt on your head. Yeah.
So, did you feed the raccoons?
I didn't go there. It's disgusting.
You know, there's a lot of raccoons, and I guess they have like a little kiddie swimming pool, and they're mostly eating French fries.
The whole fucking thing is disgusting. Do you not have a raccoon luring like vermin into as a sideshow for your restaurant? That is the worst restaurant. How does that even pass like code violation, health code violation?
Well, they have a big plate of glass, so you don't actually have to see or smell the raccoons.
But the fact that you're encouraging raccoonery is disgusting.
Yeah, TripAdvisor, this person gave it one star. Gross. I was disgusted. This place on the outside looks like it might have some interesting stuff inside, but it's greasy, and they throw the bones of the chicken they fry there outside the windows, so you can't watch bloated raccoons, squirrels, and cats feast on the leftovers. Oh, so they're kind of like they're outside raccoons?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's not a joke. No, it is just, it's epically the worst. It's just
that has to be illegal. You can't. You shouldn't be feeding animals like that outside.
Wild animals.
I know. Oh, yeah.
I gotta tell my dog would eat anything. If we put, you know, our dog will eat if it comes off our plate. He'll try to eat it. Mm. Like broccoli.
Yeah, but you wouldn't open a restaurant. You wouldn't open a restaurant that throws garbage into the lawn of your restaurant so that you could have a zoo. Like, it's a terrible idea. You know, we didn't
Don't give people any ideas,
until we
Liz.
Just decided to get rid of our dumpster.
You got to be careful with the things that you say worst. Because it's like you've created so many things in the world, you know?
Somebody will go, hey, now that's an idea.
Hey, this woman created a daily show. Why not create a restaurant that feeds wild animals on the outside? It's a chain. Move over, Kenny Rogers Roasters. God. This is...
You know, this is the next level.
Yeah.
You know what? This is Kenny Rogers Roasters. Why did we fail? What was it? You didn't throw the bones over the fence to create critters to come. That's what happened.
Well,
just
if people love that Disney...
What
is it? The bear jamboree at Disneyland that they turned into something else?
Oh, my God. Yeah. What did they turn it into?
They turned it into a Pocahontas thing or something.
Is that what it is?
I don't remember. But they repurposed it because I guess it was racist or something. And it was
I don't remember it, but.
Yeah. They do that with a lot of Disney properties. They always have like something that used to be associated with one thing. But somehow they always kept that, the Song of the South.
Mm hmm. What's a fun
Splash
little
Mountain, you know, and you're there, zippity doo da, zippity, and then you get, you know, all wet.
Yeah, that's real racist. Yeah.
And they kept that. People just love that wet racist ride.
The key when you go on that
ride.
You
know what people love?
What?
Go ahead.
The key to like not get wet on that ride is to make sure your feet are underneath the seat in front of you.
Yeah, because if your feet get wet, you're fucked.
If your feet get wet, that's the worst.
Yeah, you're just not having any fun. No fun.
Do you think that Disney one day is going to repurpose the Splash Mountain into something more? Because, you know, it's tied to that horrible movie, you know, and people go, Mommy, what's this movie? What's this ride about? And like, shh, don't ask. Just enjoy the wetness.
It's about a mountain.
Wet mountain.
It's about a bird.
Just about a wet mountain.
A bear and a rabbit and some honey and a lot of racism.
That's right.
Liz, it's
all splash mountains matter.
Liz, it's always a pleasure to shoot the breeze with you. You're just
lovely. I love you, and hopefully you will come to the show. Come to the show. It's going to be fun.
Okay, we'll definitely try to.
I'll come back backstage.
We'll bring you some fried chicken.
You'll listen, buy the backstage.
We do have raccoons in this city, so maybe we can lure some to the back door of the metro.
There's a pizza joint right next to it.
You know what? You guys are always thinking, you know what I'd love?
What?
A horde of raccoons just snacking on chicken bones, greeting me at the back door. It's very, very like the women. Like, I just feel like it's amazing.
We might get some possum in there, too, because we have those in the city as well. We even had a cougar in the city once.
Oh, my.
Coyotes.
Yeah.
They're all over. And now you're going to have a second one, because I'm coming to town.
Get it, girl.
All right. You guys are the best.
Thanks, Liz.
Take care.
Good luck on
the tour. Thanks
so much, guys. Bye. Rainbow uterus power. Right.
Yes. Lady Parks
Rainbow
justice.
Uterus power.
Unite. Yay. Form of a wet
Unite.
Uvula.
Form of a fallopian tube.
Oh, my God. I am going.
Bye.
Hang up already.
Liz Winstead lives in Brooklyn, New York. You can catch Lady Parts Justice League and their really big show, The Vagical Mystery Tour, in Chicago on June 27th at Metro. And, of course, they're touring all over the country. You can get tickets at vagicalmysterytour.com. Roll up. Lick it up, seal it up, and enjoy the show.
Lots of funny women on the show. So, yeah, I'm excited. Dina's going to perform, Dina Martinez, and also Jackie Cashin, who was on the Lady Dynamite special on Netflix.
I'm really glad that I got to talk to Liz about Rachel Maddow's cocktails, because I've always wanted to know about those. It just strikes me as a very sophisticated, intelligent...
Yeah.
And delicious evening with some brilliant minds.
Well, you know, Rachel, if you're out there listening, maybe you could just make Fausto a little cocktail, put it into a Ziploc bag,
mail it, and
just throw it into the mail. He'll drink anything you send him.
Well, I think the experience of being in her apartment and talking to her as she's mixing this drink, and she'd be like,
the hair
Chris
on the back
Matthews.
Of her neck is standing up now, and she's getting really scared. Oh, my God, no. Not Fausto.
Chris Matthews loves this grape flavored vodka. Shaking it, you know. My favorite recipe is, I call it a Patricia. It's like a margarita, but it's made instead of using just, you know, sugar or triple sec, you use white grape juice.
Ooh.
And it gives it a very interesting grape flavor to a regular margarita.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Try it sometime, Rachel.
Let's have one right now.
Oh, shake it up and not stir it. Mm. Or better yet, you can make a margarita, blend it, and then you top it off with some dark red wine. So it's a deconstructive sangria.
Mm.
Try that sometime. See if you like it.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support, so if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. Your contribution to this show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to do it if it weren't for people like you.
That's right. Go to our store, feastoffun.com/store, and get yourself a Feast of Fun t-shirt, hunty, because you look fabulous in them. Original and still the best hunty t-shirts. Often imitated, never replicated. Thank you so much for listening, everyone.
Bye-bye.